Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. It's about 7 past the hour. Welcome to tonight's program. Glad you can make it. We are not video streaming tonight. We will be covering the situation. We'll be talking about, I should say, this is not a news program. The situation with the volcano of oil that continues to erupt in the Gulf of Mexico, unabated. Also, scientists have created life. Oh, my God. All sorts of stuff tonight. But first, all day today, no matter where you were listening, you listened to the fallout from my former Air America colleague, Rachel Maddow, from her program last night on MSNBC, where she had Rand Paul, who won the Republican nomination in Kentucky to be that state's senator to take Jim Bunning's place. The fallout is simply, comes from the fact that Rand Paul pretty much introduced himself to the United States last night. Introduced the Libertarian Party last night as exactly what it is. It doesn't make any difference how many liberals or progressives or even normal conservatives try to explain that the Tea Party, the Tea Bagger movement, and the Libertarian movement is essentially racist. And the reason it is essentially racist is because it insists that there be no government interference where it concerns acts of discrimination. That is a coward's response to say, I'm against government, except in a more minimal sense. It's also a guarantee of disaster, social breakdown, all sorts of problems that can develop or erupt inside a multicultural society like ours. The fallout, of course, has been that Rachel Maddow, among all the electronic journalists, was the only one to confront this bastard on the ground that he stands on. Not only his racism, but the inherent racism of the teabaggers. We've talked about it on this program, but this program is insignificant. This program doesn't matter. Rachel's program does, by witness to the fact that it was picked up by just about every single news organization in the country today. So kudos to Rachel for exposing not just Rand Paul, but the entire twisted racist teabagger movement. At some point today, I don't know what I was doing. It may have been when I was waiting for Molly to finish her last day in kindergarten. Tomorrow's her graduation. And graduation from kindergarten. Oh, my God. Is that what they call it? Graduate? Kathy had some errands to do, so it was my turn to pick up Molly. And I had about an hour to kill, so I went to coffee shop that I like to go to over in Decatur, Georgia. Independent, small coffee shop. And it's wired. And I had a little laptop with me. And drinking an Americano, sitting there, you know, just killing time, going through the various news sources that I usually check and some that I usually don't. And after about a half an hour of that, it just occurred to me that the frustration I was feeling was about to explode out of my chest. You know, going from a relatively good mood today and then hanging out at the coffee shop for about half hour, 45 minutes, reading on the net, on the web, all this stuff. And the frustration just got, I don't know, all of a sudden, just like it's what Ernest Hemingway used to call the black ass. You know, it settles around you. And I could feel that I could feel that. And it was just, all of a sudden it got difficult to breathe. Not in a physical way. You know what I mean? I don't mean difficult. Of course I could breathe, but just that feeling of, hard to breathe in and breathe out. Hard to breathe in, the air. Hard to breathe in the reality of what was going on. Hard to breathe it out if you do breathe it in. The oil volcano was the central part of this frustration and rage and anger. Now that BP has allowed, and we'll get to that tonight too, has allowed this filthy capitalist, filthy company, which, by the way, keep in mind it was BP that back in 1953 insisted on the overthrow of the government of Iran. But BP finally allowed live pictures to be broadcast from the crack in the earth that they caused. And the picture is horrifying. Pictures are just horrifying. And this has been going on for a month. This is 1 month of 70, 90, 100, 110,000 barrels of oil a day. Is it a day? Is it an hour? Who knows? Pouring into the Gulf of Mexico. And that was kind of the center of what I was feeling. And all of a sudden it occurred to me today in a very profound way that the Obama administration is absolutely useless. It is incapable of doing anything. All that it is doing is following the worst policies of the Bush administration. It's incapable of doing anything. Barack Obama and his gang is incapable of doing anything that is even remotely liberal or progressive. What they are doing is following the path that every president of the United States has followed since Reagan. Every single one. And that is to smooth the way for corporate capitalism to finally own outright the entire country and our governing system. A month. A solid month. And this filthy capitalist country and this ineffective, inability to govern Barack Obama administration together have conspired to destroy what? We don't even know yet. Poor Governor Paiyush Jindal from Louisiana, figuratively speaking, running around like his hair was on fire today. Because all of a sudden, the coastal area of Louisiana, bang, there it is. Between the oil and the dispersants, everything in the Gulf of Mexico that comes near this stuff is dead. I heard today about these dispersants. This stuff is like one molecule away from antifreeze. And anything that comes in contact with it either suffers profound death, which is instantaneously dying, or dies over a period of several weeks or months, depending on the organism. Everything in the Gulf of Mexico is dead. And there's more. Now, if I haven't totally freaked you out, stick around.
If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing. Some writers and critics who prophesize with your pen and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. There's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now
Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. So the realization today in reading what I could, circulating through the web, that the Gulf of Mexico is essentially dying. It's going to become a dead sea. And it's not going to be because of the salinity as a result of fresh water pouring from these melting glaciers and ice caps that we're dealing with now. It's going to come as a result of collusion between the governments of the United States over the past 50 years and oil companies. And most recently, the collusion between the Obama administration, the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, and these killer companies, these murdering companies like BP. It's becoming clear that BP was given permission by a couple of administrations to do whatever it wanted to do. Pretend like you're following the rules, but do whatever you want to do. Just don't F up. Well, the oil volcano and what is occurring in the Gulf and the fact that it is now drifting without a doubt, it is drifting into the loop current, which joins the Gulf Stream. And the chaos is going to be, and the cost is going to be incalculable. There is no way. You don't clean up from something like this. You clean up the area that you have befouled, if it's a rocky short area, if it is a limited amount of filth that your tanker is spewing into a bay or a gulf. But you don't clean up from a volcanic eruption, an eruption similar to a volcanic eruption of oil, a mile under the surface of the sea, oil that is coming from a mile below that. (clears throat) 10,000 feet. Did you know that? 5,000 feet from the surface of the sea down to the ocean floor. And the drilling rig went at least another 5,000 feet. So we're talking 2 miles down. There's no recovery from this. Let me say it again. There's no recovery from this. This is it. Get your asses down to your favorite Gulf beach as soon as you can, if you have one, because it's over. So it hit me today that this is not an oil spill. This is not some little trivial happening. Especially when I found out that the dispersants that BP is using have been banned. Every place else, every other country that has offshore drilling, countries that are not totally corrupt. The West African countries are totally corrupt, so it doesn't make any difference what is used over there. The governments hire death squads over there to go murder people who don't like the fact that the oil companies are taking their natural resources. So forget that. But any country that has a system of laws has banned this stuff. The United States? We don't care. We didn't give a damn. Do whatever you want, BP. Go ahead. The dispersants are worse than the oil. I'll tell you why it's worse. Because to whatever degree bacteria could break down these oil molecules over the next 10, 20, 30 years, the dispersants now prevent that. So, that was the major thing that, you know, we've been talking about this now for what, a month? 2 weeks? And it's just reached that max out point with me. And it's difficult to lead this topic because it's not a topic. I mean, this is not something you bring into a radio talk show to discuss. That's not what this is. This is the worst man-made disaster. Arguably, it's going to be worse than the use of nuclear weapons in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Arguably. It's going to be right up there with global climate change. Because if this thing isn't stopped, it's not just the Gulf of Mexico that is dead. If this thing isn't stopped and it continues, you understand. I guess you understand. I guess you have done your own research and found out what this means if this stuff continues to spew, continues to erupt into the Gulf Stream and then into the Atlantic and then following the currents around the globe. I guess you've done your research on that, right? We'll be back. Before the hour, Barbara, it's Mike. I was in Santa Barbara in 1969 when that one blew. 200,000 gallons of crude spread over an 800 square mile slick, fouled 35 miles of coastline. Exxon Valdez, 10.8 million gallons and 1,300 miles of coastline ruined. And now the Gulf of Mexico has been killed. We sure learned our lesson, and the oil companies did, too. Different lessons. We learned how god-awful oil companies are. The oil companies learned how they could do anything they wanted. We watched the future die right before our very eyes. Bob. So, all of that today, you know, affecting me on a very gut level, emotional level, the micro and the macro, you know, I'm thinking about my little universe. And then I think about the bigger universe of which I'm just a tiny blip and how this is going to affect everything. This volcano of oil erupting in the Gulf of Mexico. So, and you know, when you hit that kind of icy patch in your head where you're sliding all over the place and into the black ass, as Hemingway called it, and you can't, you know, keep grabbing for railings or tree stumps or whatever, and nothing will slow you down. You're sliding all over. Can't stop. So the next thing that popped up is how, with all this stuff going on, I mean, really, bottom line survival stuff, and we're on the bad end of this. Why is it that we continue to ensure that people like Sarah Palin and Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck are paid tens of millions of dollars to continue to tell lies and speed up this rip that's occurring in the society, to speed it up? You know, I've said before on this program that these right-wingers, the conservatives, Republicans, they want people in the streets killing each other. That's what, not until you have class warfare, racial warfare, people fighting like dogs over a job or an application, not until that happens will these putrid bastards be happy. I'm looking at New York Times today, and somebody who obviously does for Rush Limbaugh what Monica did for Bill Clinton had an op-ed column about Limbaugh. All this wonderful stuff that's going on in the Republican and Teabagger organization is a result of Limbaugh. So stepping outside of just the insane, almost uncontrollable rage I feel about these people who spew this stuff into the public airwaves day in and day out on hundreds of radio stations and television, just pumping this poison into the society. No let up, pumping it and pumping it and pumping it. I tried to get outside that for a minute and thought, in a time of absolute ecological crisis like this, and not just the eruption in the Gulf, but all of it, what's going on, this planet, why doesn't Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin and all these people that had these enormous audiences, if Sarah Palin farts, Wolf Blitzer is going to report it. If Rush Limbaugh orders the destruction of Michael Steele, Michael Steele will go commit harakiri. If Glenn Beck has a crying jag and starts to do his gibberish, his unhinged gibberish on his program, millions of people across the country fall in line. And it's all they can do not to see their right arms go up in a seagull. Given the power of these people, why aren't they using it for good? I can't get this in my head. This is Mike Malloy's naive question number one from today. After sitting there realizing what we're facing from this ecological bomb that has gone off, not to mention the thermonuclear reality of global climate change. This little thought just crept in. Why aren't these people doing something? They have the ears of America. If Rush Limbaugh scratches his ass, 5 million people will reach around and start scratching theirs because he's their leader. So why isn't he? Why aren't these people, these mega rich people who are sucking everything they can? Is it because they're just hustlers? Do they not think they're going to die too? Is that what they believe? Oh, they might live longer than you and me because they can build a house way up in the mountains or way down under the earth, or they can, keep moving until finally the tidal wave of death hits them too. But surely they understand that they're not going to escape this. And I just thought to myself, well, why don't they use their enormous power, these people, to heal things, to help people not panic, to prevail upon the corporations and the government to do the right thing, to convince corporate America to shift away from fossil fuels that are killing us, killing the planet, switch to a sustainable or renewable technology? Why don't they use their power for that? Now, my answer is because they are crazy sons of bitches. They're insane. They're mad. But what if they're not? What if they're just playing around? So that added to the that poisonous feeling of I've got to go outside and take a deep breath until I realize I'm sitting outside. I'm sitting outside on this little coffee shop patio. I'm sitting outside. Capitalism is dying. And in its death throes, it's taking the whole planet with it. So why don't these leaders, these vox populi, these voices of the people, why aren't they saying, okay, look, folks, the system of gimme, gimme, gimme and predatory capitalism, it's killing us. It's killing our home. It's killing everything. We've got to change. These people that have the ears of tens of millions of people in the United States. Limbaugh, Beck, Hannity, Palin, Obama. Why? Why aren't they doing this? But the media giants, why aren't they doing something that is positive or uniting or healing? Just for now. They can go back to their game later, but just for now. But they won't. $700,000 of this dispersant was dumped into the Gulf of Mexico by BP. Even though every scientist on Earth will tell you that this stuff is murderous. On the other hand, we had scientists in the United States back in the 60s telling Dow Chemical, if you dump Agent Orange all over Vietnam, there are going to be thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of deaths. Only these will be slow deaths and deformities into the next generation, the one after that, and the one after that, and the one after that. And the scientists have told the United States weapons industry, if you use depleted uranium, you're going to cause children to be born without heads, without testicles if they're little boys, with ovaries in their lungs if they're little girls. Don't use this stuff. Don't do it. So I'm sitting on the patio of the coffee shop today thinking, Jesus Christ Almighty Malloy, you're in your 60s and you are this naive. You are this naive. You can sit here on this gorgeous May day here in the heart of Dixie and honestly ask yourself these questions. That's why you're not a superstar like Glenn Beck. That's why you're not a media monolith like Rush Limbaugh. Even though you've been in the business 25 years, Malloy, you don't get it. You're so goddamn naive.
Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. Not only did Rand Paul display his baseline racism, of course, this is true. This is the reason that the teabag movement started. It was a violent reaction to the fact that Barack Obama is classified in this sick society as being a black man. Why he's not classified as being a white man is beyond me. If you have equal parts of something, I mean, oh, never mind. The op-ed piece in the Times today wanted readers to believe that the teabag movement is the spawn of Rush Limbaugh. I think it's probably the spawn of Limbaugh and Beck and Palin, three people who are doing so much destruction in this country and who have the power to do so much good, but they will not, of course. But the teabag movement only began as a reaction, a heavy-duty racist reaction to the fact that a black-white man or a white-black man was in the White House. That is the juice that was necessary to get the teabag movement started. Now, not only are they against black-white men like Barack or white-black men like Barack, but they're against anything or any creature that is not a white Protestant or a white, if you really want to push it, Catholic. Everybody else is consists, every other group is mud people. You know, I hate religion because, mostly I hate religion because I think it is a very seriously bad trick played on the human race, but also because of how it's used. But a Tea Party leader has referred to the Islamic deity, that would be who? Allah? As a monkey god. And to Muslims as, quote, the animals of Allah, end quote. His Tea Party group, meanwhile, tells TPM or TP Muckraker, it's not concerned about the rhetoric. Mark Williams is this piece of dreck's name. Mark Williams, the conservative radio talk show host, oh, there's a surprise, who is listed as chairman of the Tea Party Express and acts as a frequent spokesman for his group. Last Friday, he wrote on his blog, quote, the animals of Allah, for whom any day is a great day for massacre, are drooling over the positive response that they are getting from New York City officials over a proposal to build a 13-story monument to the 9/11 Muslims who hijacked those four airliners. The monument would consist of a mosque for the worship of the terrorists' monkey god and a cultural center to propagandize for the extermination of all things not approved by their cult. He went on, the longest, most heavily researched and footnoted chapter in my book is about the fruit baskets and nut wads that gravitate to Islam and why it attracts such mental cases. Now, this is written, of course, by a guy who considers himself to be a very devout, Jesus-loving Christian, right? And then he posted an image of the Prophet Muhammad on his blog site with a swastika on top of his head. Williams, of course, has a history of incendiary remarks, as TPM Muckraker reports. In February, he called President Obama, quote, a half-white racist, end quote. A half-white racist. Now, none of this appears to have prompted the Tea Party Express. That's the prominent teabag group created and run by a California Republican consulting firm, to rethink its ties to this sick bastard Mark Williams. So not only does Rand Paul, the first guy to win something on the bagger ticket, and isn't he a piece of work, not only is he, by his words, by their words ye shall know them, not only is he displaying himself as a full-blown, spread-out, for everyone to see, racist. But now this Williams thug. And people want to debate whether or not the teabagger movement is racist? And a question raised by TPM Muckraker, why is Mark Williams still a guest, a frequent guest on CNN? I mean, this guy has referred to Obama as our half-white racist president. He said immigrants engage in slavery and prostitution. He posted pics of Obama and Pelosi as terrorists. He said some members of Congress are Democrats are brushing up on Mein Kampf to try to criminalize dissent. He said that Obama is Tiger Woodsing a mistress while he rapes the country. And this guy also said that after 9/11, Obama came, quote, out of the closet as the domestic insurgent that he is, end quote. So why does CNN allow this piece of toilet trash to go on their network? Well, I'm finished with the naive questions. Okay? We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we will we'll move on. The story about scientists creating artificial life is a real blockbuster. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. So, the Daily Mail of the UK had, I think, from my meanderings around the net, the most elaborate story. A scientist, Craig Bentner, who is a billionaire and Vietnam War veteran, an American. Anyway, he and his scientists have created artificial life in a laboratory, real, honest to God life in a laboratory. And of course, the accusations are coming real quick now that they are, quote, playing God and tampering with the essence of life. In a first, Craig Bentner, or Venter, the guy I'm talking about here, has made a synthetic cell from scratch. The creation of a new life form, they're calling it Cynthia, only it's spelled S-Y-N, as in synthetic, Cynthia. And according to the Daily Mail of the UK, it paves the way for customized bugs that could revolutionize healthcare and fuel production.
Pat Robertson would spell that differently.
Yeah, he would. In the future, according to Daily Mail, bacterial factories could be set up to manufacture artificial organisms designed for specific tasks such as medicine or producing clean biofuels. Dr. Venter, a 63-year-old Vietnam vet known for his showman tendencies, said last night, quote, "We are entering a new era where we're limited mostly by our imaginations," end quote. The breakthrough took 15 years and about $40 million to achieve, but it does open, does it not, an ethical Pandora's box. Ethicist said he is, quote, "cracking open the most profound door in humanity's history," end quote, with unparalleled risks. there are fears that the research, which is detailed in the journal Science, this research could be abused. No. To create the ultimate biological weapon. No. Really? No, no, no. We wouldn't do that. Create a weapon out of something this wonderful and godlike? No. There are also warnings that one mistake in a lab could lead to millions being wiped out by a plague. Kind of like, remember Will Smith's film, I Am Legend? Huh? Dr. Venter, who was instrumental in sequencing the human genome, had previously succeeded in transplanting one bacterium's genome, its entire cache of DNA, into another bacterium, effectively changing its species. But this is different. He has transplanted not a natural genome, but a man-made one. Now, to do this, he read the DNA of Mycoplasma mycoides, a bacterium that infects goats, and he recreated it piece by piece. The fragments were then, quote, stitched together, end quote, and inserted into a bacterium from a different species, a bacterium that was essentially lifeless. There, it sprang to life, allowing the new bacterium to grow and multiply, producing generations that were entirely artificial. Dr. Venter, whose team of 20 scientists includes a Nobel laureate, likens this whole process to booting up a computer. Jesus, God. You know the irony here? Of course you do. You're way ahead of me. The cloying, clotting irony is as we make the planet unable to sustain human life, Greg Venter and his crew are developing artificial life. It's amazing. Well, what are the preachers going to say? Can you imagine what the fundamentalists are going to be screaming from their pulpits when they hear about this story? Because this is creating life out of inorganic or non-organic or non, of course they're organic, but I mean not alive pieces of stuff. The Daily Mail goes on to say, now the scientists whose J. Craig Venter Institute has labs in California, Maryland, has proved the concept. The path is open for him to alter the recipe to create any sort of organism he chooses. Brushing aside the ethical concerns of his work, Dr. Venter wrote in his autobiography that it would allow, quote, a new creature to enter the world. He went on to say, quote, we have often been asked if this will be a step too far. I always reply that so far, at least, we are only reconstructing a diminished version of what is out there in nature, end quote. I always reply that so far, at least. How about this? Last night he claimed the breakthrough had changed his views on the definition of life. He said, quote, we have ended up with the first synthetic cell powered and controlled by a synthetic chromosome and made from four bottles of chemicals, end quote. He went on to say, quote, it is pretty stunning when you just replace the DNA software in a cell and the cell instantly starts reading the new software and starts making a whole new set of proteins. And within a short while, all the characteristics of the first species disappear and a new species emerges. That's a pretty important change in how we approach and think about life, he said, end quote. The process was carried out on one of the simplest types of bacteria, one that contains maybe 850 genes. Humans have 20,000 or so. And it says here it was carried out under strict ethical guidelines. What ethical guidelines? Who's jerking whom across the room with that statement? Are there ethical guidelines for creating life? I haven't heard about it. And if so, who wrote them? Anyway, The research team insists that they cannot think of a day when the technology could be used to create animals or people from scratch. Oh, no, no, no. We can't think of that day. You know what they mean by that. We can't. We dare not think of that day because it is coming. Maybe. Now it's a race. Do we have an extinction-level event that wipes out human life? And in the meantime, in laboratories around the country, you have a little bit of this synthetic life just kind of sitting there. This is like a science fiction movie. Everything about your life now has turned into, you're just a bit player in this larger scientific, science fiction scenario. You have death spewing out of a hole in the crust of the earth, literal death, ending everything in the Gulf of Mexico, and getting ready to spread to the world's other oceans. You have that on the one hand. On the other hand, you have the mad scientists locked away in a lab someplace with 20 other mad scientists who have now, and by mad, I mean insane, to do this is... I know I'm going to get a lot of argument. I'm sure there's all kinds of good reasons why creating new life forms is a wonderful thing to do. The problem with it, and the reason I call them mad scientists, is because the human race does not have the ethical structures within which to do that. The human race is still talking about spooks hanging out in the sky and talking snakes and, to explain the origins of mankind. And afterlives where people float around naked and play harps. And that's the environment in which Craig Venter is going to dump his new life forms.
Stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Andrew Brown, blogging at The Guardian of the UK, asked a question. He says, has Venter made us gods? Did Craig Venter's creation of life in the laboratory finally squeeze, or as he would say, the laboratory, finally squeeze God right out of the scientific universe? He says Craig Venter's production of entirely artificial bacterium marks another triumph of the only major scientific program driven from the beginning by explicit atheism. Francis Crick, the co-discoverer of the structure of DNA, was a militant atheist who refused to accept a job at a newly funded Cambridge College if it had a chapel, and who invented molecular biology partly to prove that there was nothing special or mystical about life. It was just the behavior of complex chemicals acting in accordance with the normal laws of nature. Now, Venter says he has built a living bacterium from nothing but chemicals and code. He says, quote, our cell has been totally derived from four bottles of chemicals, end quote. In fact, it was grown using yeast as an intermediary. But to the molecular biologist, organisms are just another kind of apparatus. It looks like the complete triumph of the materialist program. Atheists of the Dawkins type will take it as practical proof that there is no need to hypothesize God at all. We can make life without any miracles, and there's no reason to imagine a creator. Christians will retort that they don't think that God exists the way that things exist, and that God is no longer a man in the clouds with a long white beard. Still less is he a man with a short white beard like Venter. Both sides will continue to shout past one another, feeling entirely vindicated by events. But at this moment, of complete victory for materialism, something odd has happened. The chemical and material world turns out to be entirely shaped by something called information. Venter says, quote, life is basically the result of an information process, a software process. And starting with the information in a computer, we put it into a recipient cell and convert it into a new species, end quote. But though this information clearly exists in some sense, it's impossible to say what kind of thing it is because it isn't a thing at all. Whatever this may be, it isn't material, and it isn't bound by physical laws. Information turns out to be as elusive and as omnipresent as God once was. I don't mean, Bob writes, that they are both the same, you know. Andrew. Andrew writes, I don't mean that they're both the same, because clearly they are not. What's important is that neither fits into any kind of common sense category. In Orthodox theology, the idea of existence without God is senseless. Not meaningless, but self-contradictory. Something similar is true of information in the sense that Venter uses it. It isn't the things that people tell each other. It is the fundamental regularities of nature that scientists discover. A scientist without information could not exist, and certainly a universe without information could not exist, and certainly couldn't contain scientists. Descending from these rarefied speculations, there's a much lower and more urgent sense in which Venter will disturb theologians and atheists alike. The man who can make life can also give humans, apparently, godlike powers. We are as gods and might as well get good at it, said the Californian visionary Stuart Brand 40 years ago. And Venter's techniques should make it possible to engineer bacteria to do almost anything we can imagine, from cleaning up the oceans to supplying us with energy. The bacteria found in nature can work like the philosopher's stone, transforming almost any substance into anything. If we can design them to turn pollution into energy, that would be wonderful. But the same techniques could produce weapons of unparalleled cruelty and efficiency. Venter says, quote, we are limited mostly by our imagination, end quote. The worry is whether imagination will prove up to the task. The trouble with gods, as the Greek philosophers observed, is that they were not any morally better than humans, just more powerful. Well, I guess that's an upside, right, truth seekers? I mean, engineering bacteria to do anything we can imagine, from cleaning up the oceans to supplying us with energy. That sounds wonderful. But you know that's not what's going to happen. You know that man was not the tool maker. That's not what made man or humans or homo whatever drift away and into its current top of the food chain status. It's not man the tool maker. It was man the weapon maker. You know that. You saw Space Odyssey. You saw that pre-human ape-like creature with the antelope bone, looking at it, staring at it, and then realizing he could use it to kill other ape-like pre-humans who came to drink from the water hole he had decided was his. Man the weapon maker. So, biological advances to this extent? Well, of course it's going to be turned into a weapon. Of course. Absolutely. The delight of joy I know. Scared beyond belief. We're down in the shadows. And the perverted fear of violence chokes a smile on every face. It's 25 before the hour. Mike in Golden, Colorado writes, Mike, so now there's 1,001 ways we can destroy ourselves. Personally, I think it's worth it just to drive the religious fanatics crazier. Who knows? Maybe they'll drown in their own spittle or freeze to death after rending their garments. Can't you ever look on the bright side? Mike in Colorado, yeah. And Bruce writes, about that genie that Mr. Venter has unleashed. We need a bigger bottle. Bruce writes, once discovered, knowledge can't be undone. You can, for a few $100s, do some shopping on the internet and obtain everything needed to set up your own gene splicing lab in the basement. It's only a matter of time before something bad is created. The 7-foot cockroaches will ponder our passing with amusement. Oh, God. I hate roaches. I live in the South, where roaches are in abundance, and we also have palmetto bugs. Oh, Christ. One of the reasons, you know, everybody's been trying to figure out why media and the government and BP has been co-conspiring to say that only 5,000 barrels of oil a day are leaking from that gusher. The floor of the Gulf of Mexico. The Obama administration hasn't disputed that, of course. They just sit back on their ineffective asses and let this roll on. Well, the reason is because it could save BP millions of dollars in damages when the financial impact of the spill is resolved in court. That's according to McClatchy newspapers. BP and the Obama administration have said they don't want to take the measurements for fear of interfering with efforts to stop the leaks. Oh, of course. That decision, however, runs counter to BP's own regional plan for dealing with offshore leaks. I'm getting sick of that word, leak. Quote, in the event of a significant release of oil, the 583-page plan says on page 2, in the event of a significant release of oil, an accurate estimation of the spill's total volume is essential in providing preliminary data to plan and initiate cleanup operations, end quote. That's in their handbook. Legal experts said that not having a credible official estimate of the leak size provides another benefit for BP, which is the amount of oil spilled is certain to be key evidence in the court battles that are likely to result from the disaster. The size of the Exxon Valdez spill in Alaska, for example, was a significant factor that the jury considered when it assessed damages against Exxon. A former Clinton administration Interior Department official, Marilyn Hyman, who now heads the Arctic program for the Pew Environmental Group, said, quote, it's always a bottom line issue. Any company wouldn't have an interest in having this kind of measurement if they can help it. Why, of course not. Now, the story that I found extremely interesting occurred yesterday when we were at Molly's ballet recital, or it occurred yesterday during the day. The Coast Guard, CBS journalists were threatened with arrest by BP contractors and the Coast Guard. How about that? When the journalist attempted to film part of Louisiana's oil-soaked Gulf shoreline. Not the site 35 miles out. The CBS News crew was floating in an oil-saturated boat trying to get some pictures, and they were approached by a boat. In the boat were BP executives and a couple of Coast Guard personnel. Semper paratus. Semper paratus. That's the Coast Guard's motto. Always ready, always prepared. Anyway, someone aboard the boat said, when the CBS journalist said, yo, wait a minute, what do you mean we can't do this? Someone aboard the boat said, and it sounds like it came from the Coast Guard dude, this is BP's rules, it's not ours. That's what was shouted. So BP is really running the whole event, not the Coast Guard, and certainly not the Obama administration. Kurt Burkhart, writing for Mother Jones, reports numerous unconfirmed reports of cameras and cell phones being confiscated, scientists with monitoring equipment being turned away, local reporters blocked from access to public lands impacted by the oil spill. Burkhart writes, but wait, isn't that a public beach? From my viewpoint, it looks as if the Coast Guard has been given direct orders to protect BP's PR interest above safety concerns over air and water quality, above the outcries of local governments in need of aid, and worst of all, above the need for the American public to be informed about what is really going on in the Gulf, end quote. Wayne Madsen, writing for Oil Price, reported on May 7th that the Obama administration and BP are covering up the magnitude of the volcanic-level oil disaster in the Gulf and working together to limit BP's liability for damage. Madsen wrote, quote, only after the magnitude of the disaster became evident did Obama order Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano to declare the oil disaster a national security issue. A national security issue, which immediately means there goes public access to the truth. Although, Madsen writes, the Coast Guard and FEMA are part of her department, Napolitano's actual reasoning for invoking national security was to block media coverage of the immensity of the disaster that is unfolding for the Gulf of Mexico, the Atlantic Ocean, and the coastlines. BP gave $71,000 to Obama's 2008 presidential campaign, more than they gave to McCain or Clinton. So, the corporatization of our government, this is what Rush Limbaugh and all the right-wing talk show hosts have been working for. Limbaugh for the better part of two decades. And the newcomers, the ones who are really unhinged and crazy, like Beck, and then the go along, get along, the boys that want to be included in the on the corporate side because they're terrified to not be. That would be people like Hannity. This is what the goal has been: to get to the point. And it was begun partly, not begun, but it was worked on after Katrina when Blackwater was ordered by the Bush crime family to, you know, go down there and maintain law and order and kill people if necessary. Oh, and get their guns. Where were the teabaggers then? Huh? Where were the militia types then? Huh? Where were you filthy, stinking Republicans then? Huh? You cowardly little bastards. Where were you then? Oh, never mind. So, a corporation is dictating the terms of cleanup. There is no cleanup. Ending the eruption. There is no ending to it. It's preventing scientists. It is preventing engineers. It's preventing people from getting out there and correcting it. And you know why? Because once that happens, then the scope of this becomes public information. Not that the yahoos in this country give a damn. I mean, the Republicans will say, oh, well, you know, it's no big deal. The Gulf of Mexico is pretty big. It's Obama's fault. You know, if that son of a bitch weren't a Negro, this never would have happened. So the release of the live video stream now that I don't know where that came from. I guess the Obama administration and key members of Congress and BP got together and said, look, you know, we're going to have to show the yahoos something. We're going to have to show the dumbass Americans something. We're going to have to show the teabaggers and the religious crazy people something. Because even they are starting to get a little bit restless. They don't know the scope of this. They don't know how their lives are ending. But we need to show them something. So here, do a video. Okay, let's do a video. And the breathless news gathering organizations today. Did you hear any of that? ABC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC. Oh my goodness. They're falling all over themselves. Now we have live video. What's going on down there? Look, 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 everybody. Look, look, look. How did they get it? How did they get the video? BP gave it to them. Why did BP give it to them? Well, maybe because the Obama administration said, come on, boys, you got to give something up here. Come on, come on, come on, come on. We'll protect you. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Give something. And then media, television, just going absolutely nuts, huh? Look, look what we've got here. Look. Oh, my. Is it still 5,000? Somebody tell me. Where's my supervising producer? Where's my senior editor? Is it still 5,000? Is that what we're still saying? 5,000 barrels a day? Is that still what it is? No? Yes? Is it? That doesn't look like 5,000 to me. That looks like 90,000, 150,000. What's the number? What's the number? 5,000? We're still saying 5,000? Okay. A soldier of a misfortune. A soldier of an angry call. Soldiers on foreign soil.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
Tammy, for the hour, in reference to the teabag freak who was talking about the monkey god, Allah, the monkey god. Teabaggers are just dumber than hog snot, aren't they? Anyway, Terry in Cincinnati writes, Mike, Allah, Jehovah, and Yahweh are different names for the exact same god. The same God told Al-Qaeda to fly the planes into the Twin Towers and turned around and told George Bush to invade Iraq. He's the same God who told the Jews 4,000 years ago to commit genocide throughout the Middle East. He's the same God who sent the Ottoman Turks on their murderous rampage, then turned around during the Crusades and told the Christians to go destroy the Ottoman Turks and liberate the Holy Land. Holy effing blank, am I confused? No wonder the religious world is so insane. Yeah, that's the part of the basic reason that I think anyone who subscribes, I mean really subscribes to religious dogma is borderline psychopath or sociopath or just plain crazy. Because it means to me that that person just really doesn't care. He's so, or she is so eat up with fear and doubt and, unable to deal with death that, they don't check this stuff out. They never take a course in comparative religions or, and I'm not just talking about the big three. I'm talking about religions that go back 5, 6, 8,000 years, and find all the oh, never mind. Christ, I'll get started on that again. The European Space Agency yesterday said that the Gulf of Mexico oil spill is now in the loop current. The way it was reported by ESA, European Space Agency, scientists monitoring the U.S. oil spill with ESA's Envisat radar satellite say the spill has entered the loop current, a powerful conveyor belt that flows clockwise around the Gulf of Mexico toward Florida. Dr. Bertrand Chaperon of IFREMER, the French Research Institute for Exploitation of the Sea, said, quote, these images from space, we have visible proof that at least oil from the surface of the water has reached the current. This particular scientist and another one have been combining surface roughness and current flow information with the satellite advanced synthetic aperture radar, whatever the hell that is, data of the area to monitor the proximity of the oil to the current. Now it's there. The scientists warn that since the loop current is a very intense, deep ocean current, its turbulent waters will accelerate the mixing of the oil and the water in coming days. One of the scientists said this might remove the oil film on the surface and prevent us from tracking it with satellites, but the pollution is likely to affect the coral reef marine ecosystem. Well, and the real issue that just about put me over the edge today was the lack of interest in this. And by lack of interest, I don't mean lip service. I mean lack of interest to the extent of assigning a team of scientists and engineers to A, figure out how this happened. I mean, seriously. And B, stop it. Stop it. The Obama administration has done nothing. This thing has been blowing millions of gallons, hundreds of millions, if not trillions of gallons of oil into the Gulf for a month. Do you believe this? A month. And what has the government of the United States done? Well, you see, the teabaggers and the conservatives should be applauding wildly because they believe in government staying the hell out of everything. Right, you dumb bastards? Well, here you are. No government involvement. How does it feel? Huh? You halfwits? How does it feel? Poor Piyush Jindal standing down there on the oily shores of Louisiana screaming for government intervention. Well, Piyush, wasn't it just a few months ago that you were giving the finger to that whole idea? And Piyush is just, when will Haley Barbour start screaming for assistance on the Gulf of Mississippi on the coast? And when will Mr. Goodhair Perry in Texas start screaming, the son of a bitch that wanted to secede from the Union? Well, here you have it, boys and girls, all you teabag conservative Republican freaks, you limbites and you Beck eaters. Here you are. No government. Nothing. No intervention whatsoever. How's that corporate take care of things thingy working out for you, huh? How's it going, conservatives, Republicans, you teabag jerks? Here you are. No government involvement. Are you going to blame Obama? From that point of view, you halfwits? See, I blame him from the other point of view, the rational point of view, that the only organization, entity that is able to respond to something horrific like this is the federal government. Every single BP executive should be placed under arrest and jailed until this thing is stopped. Then they should be put on trial for crimes against humanity and locked up for the rest of their goddamn lives. That's what should happen. BP should be immediately nationalized and destroyed. Cap every one of these wells. Has the Obama administration demanded that all drilling stop until all the safety aspects of these platforms can be checked out? No. There you go, teabaggers. You wanted this, you halfwits. You got it. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Yeah, no government. This is what no government looks like, only a lot more than this. You know, Rand Paul wants to get rid of the Department of Agriculture, Department of Energy, Department of Education, yada, yada, right down the line. Okay. And when there is an extinction-level event disaster like this one, this is what it's like with no government. You half-witted morons, you right-wingers, huh? You like this? You don't care because, you know, you're going to rapture up to Jesus eventually anyway. And the head of BP, who I saw him today briefly. I don't know if it was the live program or just something he said earlier. But he was talking about this dispersant. He said this dispersant that they were using is perfectly safe. It was like soap bubbles. Soap bubbles. See, that's why the son of a bitch should be put in jail, held as a material witness until this entire thing is cleaned up, cleared up. If we can hold people of the Muslim faith or people who want us out of their country, if we can hold them indefinitely until the war on terror is over, which will be never, why not hold these pigs from BP until the oil spill is cleaned up, which also is going to be never. But that's not what's going to happen, you see? Ken Salazar ought to be thrown in jail, too. Obama's, what is he, Department of the Interior? What is this filthy bastard? Why isn't Ken Salazar in jail? Right along with the BP executives who call the dispersant soap bubbles. Corey in Louisville writes, I'm not sure how much I'm going to be affected by this, as the only seafood I really eat is shrimp. So let's move on to the comedy portion of the program. Rand Paul. While you are still laughing, consider that he wants to get rid of the Department of Education. No big loss as we rank in the bottom five in terms of education standards in the country. Kentucky does. The evangelicals up in the hills and hollers of East. By God, Kentucky won't give a damn anyway. It leaves more time for snake taming, tongues practice, and geography lessons of the 6,000-year-old Earth. Anyway, in the Department of Agriculture and the Americans with Disability Act, Rand Paul wants to get rid of all of them. Now, in a state where the economy is mostly based on tobacco and horse breeding and horse racing, in other words, things that are directly affected by the Department of Agriculture, Rand is toast. The only thing Democrat Jack Conway needs to do is keep feeding Rand Paul more rope. Remind the people that Rand Paul is not in line with the people of Kentucky. I know that most of the people here are Democrats of the Ben Nelson, Blanche Lincoln variety, but they do have some sense in that if you tell them one candidate who's only been in Kentucky for 3 years is going to take away their federal farm subsidy and make sure none of that precious pork is coming into the Commonwealth, and the other candidate is a native son who is going to make sure that the rural people get jobs and is going to improve the education of their sons and daughters and won't take their money away, even the pea brains in Kentucky can figure out that much. And just a closing thought on the oil spill and Rand Paul. Just think that if Rand Paul were in the Senate right now, he would be demanding that the private corporations have the ability to haggle, argue, and significantly overcharge the local affected areas for months and do a half-assed to no-ass job of cleaning up the mess. Teabaggers, keep in mind, less government means more oil being left in your fishing areas and shrimping areas and hunting areas. You want no government in your life? Well, here you are. Corey in Louisville. Well, that's interesting, Corey. You and I channeling the same muse tonight. In the New York Times, all the news is fit to print. This lead. Tensions between the Obama administration and the scientific community over the Gulf oil spill are escalating, with prominent oceanographers accusing the government of failing to conduct an adequate scientific analysis of the damage and of allowing BP to obscure the spill's true scope. Scientists point out that in the month since the Deepwater Horizon oil rig exploded, the government has failed to make public a single test result in water from the deep ocean. And the scientists say the administration has been too reluctant to demand an accurate analysis of how many gallons of oil are flowing into the sea from the gushing oil well. And it goes on and on and on. You can find it, New York Times, if you are so inclined. I think it was in today's issue. But this collusion of silence and deception, and Salazar especially, if there's anybody in the Obama administration that needs to be jailed right now for collusion or for, I don't know, make something up, jaywalking, I don't give a damn, lock this bastard up, along with the BP executives, lock them up, hold them until this is resolved. Until we come to terms with the fact that the Gulf of Mexico is going to be a dead zone. And then figure out what to do with them. I don't know. What would you do with them? Huh? What would you do with them? Good God. You want to do some phone calls? Sure, we haven't for days. Dave is in Boston listening on XM. Hello, Dave.
Hi, how you doing?
Not very good. Not very well.
Why not? I'm a marine biologist. I'm in Boston.
Yeah?
Yes, and believe it or not, they're over-exaggerating the damage that this is going to cause in the Gulf.
What?
From all reports, they are over-exaggerating.
Are you serious? Are you out of your mind? Are you drunk?
Serious.
Are you drunk?
Nope, not yet.
All right, now what marine biologists are you talking? I'm going to assume that you're not jerking me around.
No, no.
BP and the government have been saying 5,000 barrels a day, and now scientists are saying more like 90,000 barrels a day. Who's right, Dave?
I'm just saying that.
Pick one.
It will clean itself up.
It'll clean itself up.
It will. Nature has a way. Of cleaning itself up.
All right, let me. You're as much of a marine biologist as I'm a Catholic priest. I don't like people to call my program and lie, and you're a liar. So I'm going to disconnect you and move on to somebody else. But let me give just a little bit of response to your half-witted dumbass statement, Dave.
Nature has a way of cleaning itself up.
Do you have any idea how a water system, a deep water system like the Gulf of Mexico, cleans itself up? One of the ways it cleans itself up is by using bacteria and plankton, all kinds of the tiny little organisms and creatures that break this stuff down. What happens, Dave, the marine biologist? What happens if the tiny little creatures are destroyed? What's going to clean it up, Dave? Where are the plankton? Where are the bacteria, Dave? Don't call my program and tell me you're a marine biologist. You're a marine jerk. That's what you are.
I'm a marine biologist. Oh, it's not as bad as it seems.
I'll tell you what, Dave. Come 4 or 5 months from now when the sea or the fishing industry in Massachusetts totally collapses. Right? Ah, totally collapses. And you can't go pork up on your lobsters and your scallops and all that high cholesterol crap I'm sure you eat. Call me back then, Dave, and tell me how it's all cleaned up, right? See, that is just a typical attitude. I'm telling you, this guy personifies what we talk about, but denial and avoidance. Oh, it's not going to happen. Or the one I like better. Oh, God will take care of it. It's part of God's plan. Don't worry about it. Nah, it's not that bad, Mike. Come on, the Gulf will clean itself up. Nature has a way of cleaning itself up, Mike. Don't worry about it. Jesus, where do these people come from? Oh, that's right, they come from the American education system. That's right, never mind.
Out in the big light, it's all-
time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
Two past the hour, you know, BP is saying now that they have this little tube where they're siphoning off some of the spill. And guess what? They claim they're siphoning off 5,000 barrels a day. Well, gee, that must mean they're getting everything then, right? Oh, but wait, when you look at the live video feed, it doesn't look like anything has changed at all. But wait, I thought 5,000 barrels a day was what the flow was. But wait, no, they say they're collecting 5,000. Gee, somebody's lying. And somebody is assisting in the lying. And somebody, well, and the stupidity here, in its emergency plans, in the event of an oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, BP's 582-page emergency response booklet made it clear that it knows how to, quote, save seals, sea otters, and walruses, end quote, in the Gulf waters. Right? Walruses! Seals! The only problem is, of course, that someplace else where these sons of bitches pollute. I've been going to the Gulf of Mexico for 45 years, and I have yet to see a walrus. It appears BP literally copied and pasted emergency response plans to apply to any spill in the world, regardless of the reality of the local ecosystem, so says Michael Whitney, writing at Fire Dog Lake. Homeland Security Wire noticed the errors after a report from USA Today highlighted other aspects of BP's total lack of preparation in the event of a disaster as catastrophic as what's going on in the Gulf. But they didn't have to prepare. Dick Cheney told them, do whatever you want. We will leave people in government for you that will never enforce anything. Go for it, boys. Just make sure my cut is put in the numbered Swiss account. Okay? I'm going to need a heart transplant eventually, so I want lots of money. And the Obama administration, beginning to understand that Barack Obama is a coward. He is a coward. And he's wishy-washy, and he's not a leader. What Barack Obama is a great speaker. As the Homeland Security Wire notes, as reckless and unprepared as BP was to copy and paste emergency response notes without a real plan for how to tackle a massive oil spill in the Gulf, the real problem rests with the complete failure of regulators not only to notice this problem, but to act on it. Any reasonable person, Michael writes, whose job is to ensure the safety of offshore drilling, as is the task of MMS, the Minerals Management Service, should know that, quote, seals, sea otters, and walruses, end quote, do not live in the Gulf of Mexico. That alone should have been a red flag to inspect every word of BP's supposed readiness plans, if not put a halt to offshore drilling operations until MMS was 100% satisfied with the readiness of industry to go after a spill. Instead, MMS winked and nodded to BP and the rest of the industry and pretended walruses bask on the shores of Florida. MMS went right on ahead and issued 27 approval for offshore drillings in the 2 weeks after the disaster occurred. So I'm sitting there drinking coffee today and I'm just I'm just thinking to myself. It's just absolute madness. Corporate America runs things. In this instance, BP. A month. Millions of gallons have poured into the Gulf of Mexico. And it's going to continue and continue and continue. And again, to you right-wing bastards, you conservatives, you Republicans, you teabaggers, you phony-ass libertarians, this is what it looks like with no government. This is just one little tiny example. You stupid bastards.
Thing of truth, it's more Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. From McClatchy Newspapers, the latest video footage of the leaking Deepwater Horizon oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico show that oil is escaping at the rate of 95,000 barrels a day. That's 4 million gallons. Nearly 20 times greater than the 5,000 barrel a day estimate BP and the government have been citing for nearly a month. That's according to an engineering professor at a congressional hearing yesterday. Steve Worley, associate professor of mechanical engineering at Purdue, earlier this month made simple calculations from a video BP released on May 12th and came up with the flow of 70,000 barrels a day, according to NPR. And yesterday, Worley told a House Commerce and Energy Committee subcommittee that his calculations of two leaks that show up on videos BP released on Tuesday showed 70,000 barrels from one leak and 25,000 from the other. He said his calculations could be off by 20%, meaning the spill could range from between 76,000 to 104,000 barrels a day. Well, is this not cause to lock people up and to hold them as material witnesses? Oh, I don't mean to deny them their constitutional rights. We have a right to hold people for, I would imagine, a prescribed period of time as a material witness. Some people with dark skin in this country are picked up in the South and held as material witnesses for, two or three or four years. As far as I know, these are all white people. These are all white men. What's going on? What if one of these guys was named Muhammad Ishmael or something? Ah! Why aren't they locked up? Just held as material witness. That's all. Just held as material witness. We buy people from herdsmen in Afghanistan. We do. you know, herdsmen or opium growers or people of a different tribe will show up when an American patrol is going by and say, here, guess what I found, a terrorist. And we take that person and torture him at Bagram Air Base, and then we bring him to Cuba, where we torture him again and again and again and again, and we tell him no trial, no rights, no nothing. And what did this poor miserable bastard do? Nothing. What have the executives at BP done? Huh? Doesn't seem just, does it? Just does not to me. Of course, I'm just a goddamn liberal. What do I know? I'm just a progressive. I'm just amazed. I've got a cheesy little radio program. There's not too much I can do about it. I wish I were Rush the Pigman Limbaugh or that great American leader, what's his name, Beck. If I had big audiences, boy, I could straighten everything out, couldn't I? Christ. Tom is driving in Iowa. Hey, Tom.
Good evening.
Hi.
That caller from Mike was, I don't know, I think his marine biologist toolkit consisted of a plunger. What a freaking moron.
Yeah, I think so. I get him on this program. I do.
All right. Let's wind the clock back to 1989. I remember when we had the Valdez oil spill. And I remember hearing in 1991 on Rush Limbaugh's program that Mother Nature is taking care of herself and the oil is cleaning herself up.
Right.
Well, it's 20 years later, and if you go to the bottom of Prince William Sound, you'll still find globs of oil down there.
Right.
However, Mother Nature has come back somewhat, but we're just going to have to write off the Gulf Coast for 20 years, for two decades. And I guess the point of my call is, honestly, I do not hear anything out of the environmental movement when it comes to transportation solutions for automobiles. I hear electric cars, and which I'm all in favor of, but how are we going to generate the electricity for electric cars where it's affordable for the average working person in this country, where it's not going to create greenhouse gases? And I guess that's the point that, you know, if we continue to drill for oil, another one of these accidents could happen. And honestly, I'm probably more conservative politically than I am a liberal, but that's the one thing that I just don't hear from the environmental movement. And what I always hear is that, oh, we can go to mass transportation. Well, that does you no good if you're a roofer out in Davenport, Iowa, and you need to travel 60 miles to work each day. And I guess that's the bottom line.
I've been hearing from the environmental movement, Tom, for the better part of 40 years.
Yep.
Saying,
What am I missing?
Well, I don't know. Maybe you've been listening to too much Rush Limbaugh. I don't know. But I've been hearing from the environmental movement for 40 years, telling people, telling me, and telling you, and telling whoever, that we have to get away from fossil fuel-driven everything. Now, the environmentalists are not engineers. We also have engineers in this country. The environmentalists are environmentalists. Anybody with a high school education, I think, could take a look at what has happened over the past 40 years and say, well, we've got to stop this. There was an effort made to stop the rapid growth of the ozone hole. That was the thing back 30 years ago. Oh, well, the ozone hole over Antarctica caused by chlorofluorocarbons that are in hairspray and this spray and that spray. And yeah, we did something about it. Is the ozone hole still there? Yeah, because this kind of damage that we're doing can't be repaired. But it was the environmentalist movement that said, we've got to stop using this. And it was the Limbaughs of the world that says, oh, no, you don't, for Christ's sake. It's another attempt to destroy American capitalism. So I'm not sure what you mean about the environmentalists having been screaming about this forever.
Well, no, but my point is that, you know, the average American's life pretty much revolves around an automobile. I mean, that was probably one of the biggest invention that changed modern life in the 20th century was the automobile.
But let me interrupt. Don't you think that we have people smart enough in this country to develop solar energy generating stations that could then store solar energy in batteries, and that the entire system could be run on solar, geothermal, wind, all sorts of energy. Energy is a storable resource. That's what a battery is. And doesn't it seem that this could have been done if the environmental movement would have inspired government or industry 40 years ago to take on this problem? We would not be in this situation. I remember when the Carter administration just tried to get the auto industry to install catalytic converters on their filthy, spewing, polluting cars, because the lead levels in the atmosphere were killing children and killing people and making people making their lungs bleed. And I can remember the auto industry saying, "Oh, we can't do that. It'll cost too much money." And finally, it was forced on the bastards, and they didn't go out of business. They didn't get into trouble because they put on catalytic converters. They got into trouble because they were selling garbage, while the rest of the auto industry in Germany and Japan and Korea decided to sell not garbage. But then it turns out that they were selling garbage too. I don't know how to answer your question. But the last thing I would do, as long as I consider myself to be sane or partly sane, would be to blame any of this on the environmental movement. The environmental movement, you see, this is the other thing. It's a holistic movement. There's no such thing as, okay, we have to stop using cars and then everything will be right. There's no such thing as, okay, we've got to stop building cell phone towers and it'll be all right. There's no such thing as, okay, we got to stop. It's all interwoven. It's all interwoven. There is no such thing as one element of destroying the planet. It's all interwoven. But science and technology and capitalist corporatist America took the easy way out. And the easy way out says, look, just punch holes in the goddamn planet and suck this stuff up. That's all you have to do. It's cheap. Suck it up. Punch holes. Technology. Schmecknology. Punch holes. I'm so sometimes I can't see. Before the hour. And then there's this. I had this on the stack and it got past me. And from Madison, West Virginia, this was released Monday, 3 days ago. Emma Kate Martin and Benjamin Bryant were arrested Monday while blockading the driveway to Massey Energy's regional headquarters in Boone County, West Virginia. The magistrate set their bails at $100,000 each for misdemeanor charges of trespassing, littering, conspiracy to commit a misdemeanor. Now, you remember Massey Energy. You know who Massey Energy is. They're the ones that sent 29 people to their deaths most recently. Nick Martin, Emma Kate's older brother and participant in Climate Ground Zero's campaign of civil resistance, stated, quote, "As I hugged my little sister following her arraignment this morning, I was awed by her calmness and high spirits. I admire her courage and her willingness to put her freedom on the line for the well-being of Appalachian communities and the environment. I will worry about her constantly until she is free. My sister is my hero," end quote. Emma Kate Martin was perched on a platform suspended in a tripod, a structure built with rope and three log poles. And Benjamin Bryant was locked to the base of a pole. Both Emma Kate Martin and Benjamin Bryant underwent extensive nonviolence training prior to their action. Their banner read, "Massey, prophets before people in mountains, fight back." They articulated their motives and sense of responsibility that impelled them to act in an open letter to Massey shareholders and the American public. You can read the letter at climateground0.org. climateground0.org/open letter. Among their top concerns are mountaintop removal and the Brushy Fork sludge impoundment on Coal River Mountain. Climate Ground Zero's legal team is researching the legality of bail this high and will seek legal recourse. Sarah Seeds, a veteran nonviolent activist, said, quote, "Boone County is not giving these bails to simply punish Emma Kate and Ben. Boone County and the state of West Virginia are using high bail as an intimidation tactic to deter others from standing up for the health of communities and against mountaintop removal and Massey's mistreatment of workers," end quote. There is an emerging pattern of nonviolent protesters receiving heavy-handed punishment while those who use violence against them are let off the hook. Now think about this. Think about this. The executives of BP are gorging themselves on whatever they gorge themselves on, whatever they drink, as they give the finger to everybody in the United States. Here are two young people who tried to protest a murderous capitalist pig organization, and they are in jail under $100,000 bond for misdemeanor charges of trespassing, littering! The website is climateground0.net or .org, either one. Climate Ground Zero. Can you believe that? Two people build a tripod out of logs. One of the people sat on a platform suspended by a rope inside the platform, inside the tripod, and the other one sat himself down and chained himself to the platform, and they unfurled their banner, and they are now in jail under $100,000 bond each. Remember what we talked about 3, 4, 5 years ago about how acts like this of protest, trying to save people, communities, the environment, the earth, and under the Bush-Cheney crime family, laws were passed that said these people can be held for acts of terror. For acts of terror, because they are obstructing a corporation, and these two were not obstructing anything. They were at the gate of Massey Energy. Corporate America owns America. Do you understand that? This shows the depth of the ignorance and stupidity of the teabaggers. They want corporations to run things. They don't want government. You dumb bastards. That's exactly what you have. That's right. You're blinded by the Negro in the White House. That's right. I'm sorry. I forgot. the white black man is driving you crazy. Or I'm sorry, the black white man is driving you right out of your crawl space, you teabag freaks. Go to this website, will you please? ClimateGroundZero.net. ClimateGroundZero.net. Mark's in Cleveland. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mike. We got to find out where those two individuals are being held and stay outside until they're released. But real quick, that fellow that called the marine biologist, I think he's a biologist in the way that George Costanza on Seinfeld was a marine biologist. But I hope that he's right, that Mother Nature will take care of itself and they'll find out where these people live and nature will just come and devour them.
Just devour them. I hear you. Hey, Mark, we're flat out of time, man. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.